Welcome back. We're still reading the mother. We're in the sixth chapter. The mother as the Mahashakti of this triple world of the ignorance stands in an intermediate plane between the supramental light, the truth life, the truth creation, which has to be brought down here, and this mounting and descending hierarchy of planes of consciousness that, like a double ladder, laps into the nescience of matter and climb back again through the flowering of life and soul and mind into the infinity of the spirit, determining all that shall be in this universe and in the terrestrial evolution by what she sees and feels and pours from her. She stands there above the gods, and all her powers and personalities are put out in front of her for the action, and she sends down emanations of them into these lower worlds to intervene, to govern, to battle and conquer, to lead and turn their cycles, to direct the total and individual lines of their forces. These emanations are the many divine forms and personalities in which men have worshipped her under different names throughout the ages. But also, she prepares and shapes through these powers and their emanations the minds and bodies of her vibhutis, even as she prepares and shapes minds and bodies for the vibhutis of the Ishvara, that she may manifest in the physical world and in the disguise of the human consciousness some ray of her power and quality and presence. All the scenes of the earth play have been like a drama arranged and planned and staged by her with the cosmic gods for her assistance and herself as a veiled actor. The mother not only governs all from above, but she descends into this lesser triple universe. Impersonally, all things here, even the movements of the ignorance, are herself in veiled power, and her creations in diminished substance, her nature body and nature force. And they exist because, moved by the mysterious fiat of the Supreme to work out something that was there and the possibilities of the infinite, she has consented to the great sacrifice and has put on, like a mask, the soul and forms of the ignorance. But personally, too, she has stooped to descend here into the darkness, that she may lead it to the light, into the falsehood and error, that she may convert it to the truth, into this death, that she may turn it to godlike life, into this world pain and its obstinate sorrow and suffering, that she may end it in the transforming ecstasy of her sublime Ananda. In her deep and great love for her children, she has consented to put on herself the cloak of this obscurity, condescended to bear the attacks and torturing influences of the powers of the darkness and the falsehood, born to pass through the portals of the birth that is a death, taken upon herself the pangs and sorrows and sufferings of the creation, since it seemed that thus alone could it be lifted to the light and joy and truth and eternal life. This is the great sacrifice called sometimes the sacrifice of the Purusha, but much more deeply, the holocaust of Prakriti, the sacrifice of the Divine Mother. A So at the commencement of this chapter, he was describing that the one whom we adore as the conscious force that dominates all existence has three ways of being. We have been talking about her transcendence, that she is that ineffable, unknowable, supreme being, second to none, who draws from her infinity, all that manifests in the universe, and that the manifestation of a cosmos represents the second way of being, her universality, her capacity from her transcendence to manifest a cosmos, people it with portions of her own being, and yet always remain above while being immanent. So she really is that thousandth name of the Sri Lalita Sahasranama, Lalita Ambika, she who sports in her transcendence and yet is the mother of all. But the third is when she individualizes her transcendence from above and her universality and stands necessarily upon the earth so as to lead it, to lead by example, to hew the path. She has not only to be the stage and the setting of the cosmos, but she has also to personally engage in it. Because who better can lead to light than she who is all light? So, let's look a little slowly at some of these lines here that we've just read aloud. The mother, Ambika Sri Mata, as the Mahashakti, the great power. Maha means great, Shakti means power, energy, of this triple world of the ignorance. That is everything that we know and move in. That is the material basis of the world. That is the life power that stirs into action materiality. It is the mind which causes perception and conception to grow from this living matter. All of this forms the triple world of the ignorance. And what ignorance is the compression of an immense being full of knowledge into a portion of itself in which it agrees to forget its nature. It ignores its sublime origin in order to pose as this darkness for the play of the cosmos, for the lila. So the world has ignorance as its mooring at the beginning of the cosmic adventure, but has this shining effulgence as its point of beginning above, a beginning below, and a beginning above. So the mother is the Mahashakti, stands in an intermediate plane between the supramental light, the truth life, the truth creation, which has to be brought down here. So there is this infinity above, which if we regarded it in terms of affirmation, we could say that it is. We could say that that infinity is aware of its own being, is conscious. We could say that its infinite awareness of its own infinite being is an infinite delight, and we would call that Sat Chit Ananda. That Satchit Ananda is an infinity which has no known expression to us. But we can glimpse, we can sense that that infinity self-formulates through a means of consciousness which is vast, and yet takes the unabrogated unity of that being and manifests a many-sided nature within its oneness, so that diversity multiplies the oneness without losing the sense of the utter unity which all is. That great consciousness, Mahas, Sri Aurobindo calls the supermind, the supramental region. So if we were drawing a chain of being, we would begin above with that which we cannot name, but that which we can name is Satchit Ananda. And that Satchit Ananda Rupini, the form of that Satchit Ananda, establishes itself as a power of the divine Shakti, as the supramental, and then leans down, takes the infinity that it's interpreted into this wonderful cosmos above, and establishes a chain of involution that comes down. So, she, this Mahashakti that he is speaking of here, is between that supramental world and this triple world of the ignorance, stationed between, connected to that truth light and truth power and truth delight, but leaning into the powers of the ignorance here. Her business, her ultimate job, is not simply to maintain the cosmos that she surveys and oversees, but also to aid in the descent of that truth world into this world, which beseeches its intercession. This, as she sees it, has a descending hierarchy of planes of consciousness. As this great power of consciousness focusing itself descends from the supramental, it evolves into powers and planes of mind being, then into powers and planes of life being, and then into powers and planes of physical being. So, the supramental, vijnana in Sanskrit, allows itself to be stationed in mind, manas, in prana, the life force, finally in the stuff of matter, the food of the universe. All of those stations and planes of being are like steps on this great ladder of consciousness that comes down towards and eventuating in matter. So the mind plane, the life plane, the material plane are created as this descent occurs into what seems to be the darkness of inconscient matter. But as evolution awakes and begins to stir and to climb back towards its origin, without losing its fixity in the base, it discovers those same steps in a sense. So Sri Aurobindo says this is a double ladder, lapsing into and climbing out of. Through this process of evolution, we see life arise, the presence of the soul manifest itself, and mind begin to articulate powers of awakening that the soul can use in its living form before it to access the experiences of the world, to begin to master, to begin to govern itself, begin to work in commerce with the larger cosmos and grow towards its own native heights. So we begin from this dark, clamped existence here, and we grow back towards the infinity from which we came, as sparks of her being, aspects of her own self. So this leads us to the next sentence. Determining all that shall be in this universe and in the terrestrial evolution by what she sees and feels and pours from her. The universe, then, is not accidental, it's not adventitious. She has a creative vision. It arises not simply from mentation, from something which is distant, but she feels it. It's intimate to her. So this great creatrix has an idea that she wants to invest in the cosmos and is willing to work it out person by person, stage by stage. She stands there above the gods, and all her powers and personalities are put out in front of her for the action. So the powers, in a sense, flow from the Mahashakti. And she sends down emanations of them, of these powers, into these lower worlds, the worlds of mind, life, and matter, to intervene, to govern, to battle and conquer, to lead and turn their cycles, to direct the total and the individual lines of their forces. So the Mahashakti releases from her being other Shaktis. And these Shaktis distribute the brilliance and energy of each particular face as emanations. An emanation, from the Latin, means to flow from, like a wave coming from an ocean. But in a cosmic sense, in the Neoplatonic sense, it would be the emergence from the one of various stations of universal being all the way down to the material basis. So each plane of being would be an emanation. He is speaking here of that same great creative power emanating particularized forces of those beings, so that, in a sense, they're individualized, but they have universal action. These emanations, he writes, are the many divine forms and personalities in which men have worshipped her under different names throughout the ages. He notes in a letter that the emanations he's referring to could well be considered to be the matrikas that are well known to tantric practice and go all the way back to a text that by now is familiar to you, the Devi Mahatmyam. And the matrikas are projected and withdrawn. These emanations can be sent into the cosmos and brought back, and then sent again. It depends on the conception, the vision, and the will of the governing Mahashakti, how and where and when they make their powerful appearance. But the matrikas that we typically know in mythology are consigned to battle powers of darkness, powers of evil, powers of falsehood. And so always they are bringers of light, and their energies are meant to restore cosmic order, to restore an eventual pathway to a larger harmony. So the Matrikas would be Brahmani, Maheshwari, Kaumari, Vaishnavi, Varahi, Narasimha, Aindri, and finally Chandika. She, the most terrible of them all, comes to put down the greatest asuras. So all of these appear in Devi Mahatmya. And of course, they appear in the tantras from that origination from around 500 CE all the way through the rest of the literature around the Devi, the Mahadevi. But here he makes an interesting note. She sends down emanations of them into these lower worlds to intervene, to direct the total and the individual lines of their forces. So there's a contextual, there's a comprehensive plan that these energies are overseeing, watching, looking from above. They will enter into humans, souls who are receptive to their touch, to their influence, who are agreeable to their nature. And they will use them as intermediaries of manifestation. So you'll see in your experience suddenly someone who had a very ordinary nature suddenly express a superlative power, a wisdom that is beyond them, a proficiency which outstrips anything they've done before. And suddenly the goddess in one of her forms, one of her emanations has visited, has touched them, surcharged them, and they are lifted up. And if they can sustain it, if they can be receptive, they can be transformed by that and become, in a sense, permanently in communion with that power and expressive of that. And then you see as if a dim life has suddenly become brilliant. Also, he says, she stands there above the gods, and all her powers and personalities are put out in front of her. So the Mahashakti that he's describing here is in the overmind plane. Satchit Ananda, supermind, then an overmental plane of consciousness, which takes the immensity, the perfection of that unified diversity, which is the supramental, that knowledge power, and globalizes and releases all of those aspects into universal play, but each idea, each great concept, in a sense, goes off on its own career. So while they still represent truth powers at the level of the overmental, they don't have the same sense of unity. The sense of unity which dominates throughout the supramental has gone far to the back, and the overmind has to work to recover it. And that plane, the overmind, is that region from where the great gods who populate Vedic literature and the greater gods who populate Puranic literature emerge from. So the gods who, in a sense, dominate this cosmos are not supramental, but they come instead from this power of the universal Mahashakti as she releases her energies into play. But also, he writes, she prepares and shapes through these powers and their emanations, these powers of the goddess, the minds and bodies of her vibhutis. Now, vibhuti is a term that, of course, we're familiar with in the Bhagavad Gita. The term means great power, great being. And it is not an awakened avatar, a descent of the conscious Godhead into a material form, but represents a power, whether it knows it or not, with which it's been invested by a greater force. But it's there to manifest it. And you see vibhutis in the field of human life occasionally. You see a Beethoven who bestrides the world of music. You see a Napoleon who dominates militarily and politically everyone he meets for decades. But then the power is lifted and the light is extinguished. But such is a vibhuti, even of the Ishwara. She prepares the vessel in which all these great powers will reside, even for the Ishwara. The Ishwara, again, we know from the Bhagavad Gita, we know it in chapter 4, verse 6, and chapter 18, verse 61 at the close of the book. Ishwara is the Lord, the ruler. And you would typically think of the Ishwara being in command of the cosmos. But here, Sri Aurobindo's position is that she is the one whom we adore as the mother, is the ruler. And the Ishwara is gifted with the form and the power that he exhibits by the Divine Mother. So it is the Adya Shakti, the original power, who manifests the supramental Ishwara. She is even above that, beyond where the Lord stations himself above in that world of light and harmony. She transcends even that in that greater universe. So, Satchit Ananda is a form of her being. The Adya Shakti, the original power, manifests the original supramental Mahashakti, and then from that comes the universal Mahashakti of this triple world, of which the gods and the emanations are part and parcel of her being, and then come the worlds that she dominates of mind, life, and matter. You can see, as tall as you can climb, you're stepping on the stones that the Divine Mother has set there for you, intentionally set there for you to find. So in any direction that you grow through her force. Any realization that you attain, she has gifted it to you. All the scenes of the earth play have been like a drama arranged and planned and staged by her, with the cosmic gods for her assistance and herself as a veiled actor. You see this even farther back than the Devi Mahatmyam. When you read the Rig Veda, the Devi Sukta, Mandala 10, 125th hymn, where she as Vak, the creative word whose utterance creates the world, describes herself as broader than the world. and taller than the world, and the fount of that from which comes Diao, the Father, the sky. She is so great that all the gods are moved by her wind to go where they will, and all beings reside within her. So even in the Rig Veda, she is seen as transcendent, universal, and indwelling. So there is no part of the cosmos where she is not. So we've spoken now, reading Sri Aurobindo, about the transcendence. We've spoken about the universality. And now we move to the individual portion. The mother not only governs all from above, but she descends into this lesser triple universe. Impersonally, all things here, even the movements of the ignorance, are herself in veiled power, and her creations in diminished substance, her nature body and nature force. And they exist because moved by the mysterious fiat of the Supreme, that is she herself, to work out something that was there in the possibilities of the infinite, she has consented to the great sacrifice and has put on like a mask the soul and forms of the ignorance. So, while she is transcendent, Lalita, she is still the mother, Ambika. She has become all of this because what other substance could there be? The possibilities that are there in the infinite, Satchit Ananda, represented as the supramental. But personally, too, she has stooped to descend into the darkness, that she may lead it to the light, into the falsehood and error, that she may convert it to the truth, into this death, that she may turn it to godlike life, into this world pain and its obstinate sorrow and suffering, that she may end it in the transforming ecstasy of her sublime Ananda. So this is what we chanted at the beginning, Asatoma Sat Gamaya, Tamasoma Jyotir Gamaya, Mrityorma Amritam Gamaya. Lead me from non-being to true being. Lead me from darkness to light. Lead me from death to immortality. The delight of knowing that you cannot be destroyed. The ignorance that he has referred to is, again, that separative power where light leaves the cogency of the supramental and descends into refracted darkness. Light is not utterly absent. There is no absolute blackness. There is no true opposite of the superconscience. The inconscience conceals, the ignorance conceals the light, the true being, the true Ananda, which are there. But the ignorance can be enjoyed by a wayward being here and there, like an asura, who deliberately takes the separation as the grounds upon further twisting it and to stay deviantly in the ignorance and refuse the light is what is falsehood. So, she has to come to restore order and to dispel the darkness. And so, occasionally, she will come to so conquer. But the intimation here is that this aspect, this individual aspect of the Divine Mother, has arrived in the person and the personality of she who was the mother of the Sri Aurobindo ashram, of the collaborator of Sri Aurobindo, without whom that ashram and this effort at a supramental yoga could not have begun. In her deep and great love for her children, she has consented to put on herself the cloak of this obscurity, condescended to bear the attacks and torturing influences of the powers of the darkness and the falsehood, born to pass through the portals of the birth that is a death, taken upon herself the pangs and sorrows and sufferings of the creation. Since it seemed that thus alone could it be lifted to the light and joy and truth and eternal life. This is the great sacrifice, called sometimes the sacrifice of the Purusha, but much more deeply, the holocaust of Prakriti, the sacrifice of the Divine Mother. This goes to the Rig Veda, the 10th mandala, the 90th hymn, in which the Purusha is seen as submitting himself to the creation of the cosmos, of the cosmos, by allowing his being to enter into division, one part becoming one sector of humanity, another part, another, etc., etc. So the fourfold order of society comes into being through the personal sacrifice of the Purusha. The quarters of the universe are similarly created, so that there is a concordance between the order of the cosmos and the order of humanity. There is a recognition of humanity as it looks to the world, that there I am in the larger cosmos, and the world has its play in humanity, and all are established here as part of the divine being. But Sri Aurobindo here is saying, this is far more about the holocaust of Prakriti. She establishes this world on her substance, from her being. She is the mother. So all of this is stabilized in her cosmic nature. But too, she has consented to descend personally into this and confront it. And Mother spoke many times of her willingness to do all that was necessary to arrive at the manifestation of an ordered truth individually, collectively, cosmically, here on this globe. She said that she had taken into herself deliberately every illness, all possible illnesses, so that she could work out their resolution yogically through the application of conscious force and arrive at a solution that did not need external means, but was the truth of the power of consciousness establishing order in the form that it inhabited. So, I think we're drawing nigh to where we should end for the evening, so we'll put a bookmark here and continue with the chapter next time, where we actually enter into the four powers and personalities of the Divine Mother. So tonight, something from Savitri to close our evening together. Its power that makes the unknowable near and true. In the temple of the ideal, shrined the One. It peopled thought and mind and happy sense, filled with bright aspects of the might of God and living persons of the One Supreme, the speech that voices the ineffable, the ray revealing unseen presences, the virgin forms through which the formless shines, the word that ushers divine experience, and the ideas that crowd the infinite. There was no gulf between the thought and fact. Ever they replied like bird to calling bird. The will obeyed the thought, the act, the will. There was a harmony woven twixt soul and soul, a marriage with eternity, divinized time. There life pursued, unwearied of her sport, joy in her heart and laughter on her lips, the bright adventure of God's game of chance. In her ingenious ardor of caprice, in her transfiguring mirth, she mapped on time a fascinating puzzle of events, lured at each turn by new vicissitudes to self-discovery that could never cease. Ever she framed stark bonds for the will to break, brought new creations for the thought's surprise, and passionate ventures for the heart to dare, where truth recurred with an unexpected face, or else repeated old familiar joy like the return of a delightful rhyme. At hide and seek on a mother wisdom's breast, an artist teeming with her world idea, she never could exhaust its numberless thoughts and vast adventure into thinking shapes and trial and lure of a new living's dreams. Untired of sameness and untired of change, endlessly she unrolled her moving act, a mystery drama of divine delight, a living poem of world ecstasy, a kakemono of significant forms, a coiled perspective of developing scenes, a brilliant chase of self-revealing shapes. An ardent hunt of soul, looking for soul, a seeking and a finding as of God's. There, matter is the spirit's firm density, an artistry of glad outwardness of self, a treasure house of lasting images where sense can build a world of pure delight, the home of a perpetual happiness. It lodged the hours as in a pleasant inn. The senses there were outlets of the soul. Even the youngest child thought of the mind incarnated some touch of highest things. There, substance was a resonant harp of self, a net for the constant lightnings of the spirit, a magnet power of love's intensity, whose yearning throb and adoration's cry drew God's approaches close, sweet, wonderful. Its solidity was a mass of heavenly make. Its fixity and sweet permanence of charm made a bright pedestal for felicity. Its bodies, woven by a divine sense, prolonged the nearness of souls clasped with soul. Its warm play of external sight and touch reflected the glow and thrill of the heart's joy, mind's climbing brilliant thoughts, the spirit's bliss. Life's rapture kept forever its flame and cry. All that now passes lived immortal there, in the proud beauty and fine harmony of matter, plastic to spiritual light. Its ordered hours proclaimed the eternal law. Vision reposed on a safety of deathless forms. Time was eternity's transparent robe. An architect hewing out self's living rock. Phenomenon built reality's summer house on the beaches of the sea of infinity. So, namaste. Jai Ma.